to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, and on the phone with me right now, California, I presume, based on everything I've read about him, it's Mr. Greg Trimble. Thanks for being here, man.
You bet. Glad to be here.
You know, and by here, I mean on the phone with me, so you really just had to answer the phone when I called, so I'll take that.
Yeah, it's technology.
Greg, you were just featured in an article in the Deseret News, which is how we kind of got more aware of you. But you are a blogger. You claim you're to be just sort of an average guy leading an average life. But for a lot of reasons, people are really finding you interesting, sharing your articles and loving you. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that. I do really just feel that way. Just I'm sitting here getting ready to go to work, and I don't write for a living. I don't blog for a living. I go to work just like most, you know, of the rest of the population, and go about my day.
Your blog you call Life Through My Eyes, and I think you're being humble, which I appreciate, right? Nobody likes a braggart, but I mean, you have authored a book that people can pick up. So, I mean, that sort of makes you a writer, no?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, just, yeah, I guess. I definitely wouldn't be able to live off of it. You know, it's funny when you bring that up, we talk about writing for a living or blogging or whatever, my blog does get a lot of traffic, and I've had, you know, Google keeps hitting me constantly, hey, turn on these ads and you'll be rich, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get that from people all the time, like, oh, you have this popular blog, and, you know, you should be rolling in the cash right now and making lots of money off that, right? And it's the complete opposite. It's super, super expensive to run a blog and keep servers up, and when you're getting a lot of traffic and CDNs that cost lots of money and mailing lists that cost, I mean, it's just, so it is kind of interesting, you know, talking about that, writing for a living or blogging for a living. You know, a commission on a book is nothing. I mean, unless you're like a New York Times bestseller, but.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into that a little bit more, but I do find it interesting, as you say, you don't have any ads on your site.
Yeah. I mean, I have. You can see a couple of things that have to do with just my businesses, just because it is, you know, a blog just about me, and so you can find out about the things I do. But other than that, no. I did actually turn on Google AdSense for a little bit, but because it became, and I had to lock it down so far. It was almost like 90% of the things that they wanted to present, I had to turn off.
Uh-huh.
And so it just became, there's no way I'm going to present the ads that they wanted to present. It would completely contradict the things I'm trying to write about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I've turned that off.
So we need to get you an ad for the Cultural Hall is what it sounds like. But we'll talk about that later on.
Yeah, there you go. You need to get me some of that cool music you guys play, too. I checked out the last podcast you guys did for Frankum, and I was super excited about that music that came on. Made me want to go surf.
It's a band called.
And then you start talking about Nephi and all that other Nephi and Lehi and all that other. I was like, dude, this surfer music with Book of Mormon prophets in it.
Yeah, well, it's a band called The Solutions. They're no longer together, but I think you can hear that in the credits of Singles Ward, the first one, the original. That was a band from out of Cedar City that I kind of followed when I was in college. But yeah, it's called Book of Mormon Stories. It's just a ska version of the primary song.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So let's go back. Who are you, Greg?
Man, I'm just a guy living in Southern California trying to build businesses and put food on the table and raise a family and fulfill my church callings and do all the stuff I'm supposed to do. Turn missionary, I guess you could say. I feel like that's an accomplishment to me.
Where were you born?
Born in Riverside, California.
Okay, so you are a California Mormon, essentially, but as I understand from reading, you sort of did it as you were younger, and then you hit teen years and said, meh.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic. You know, my family was active. We went to church. We weren't like the stalwart members, I guess you could say. My dad was a convert, so he didn't really, have much of an inclination to send me on a mission. It was more about baseball and sports and all that stuff. But yeah, we tried to do the best we could. And by the time I got into, my senior, I had a good senior year in high school for baseball, and then had some offers and things. And so, you know, when the bishop called me in the office, like, oh, hey, are you going to go on a mission? And I was like, maybe in a year from now, mm-hmm. knowing full well that I wanted to play baseball. And so it kind of went that direction and kept playing. And it was always one more year. And so, I mean, that was kind of my early years. Yeah. So I mean, during college time, I wasn't attending church very much, and so
how did it come that you served a mission then?
So really, really, just a hard story to explain, but I'll try to do the best I can. When I was playing baseball down in Orange Coast College.
That's in California, I presume, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, it's down near Newport Beach, Costa Mesa area. And I was starting my second year. I had already signed a scholarship with HPU, Hawaii Pacific University, with one of my good friends on the team, our third baseman. And we were so excited because, I mean, that was like the dream, right? Because when I lived down there, we would surf every day and play baseball. It couldn't get any better than that. And then we were going to go to Hawaii and finish out schooling and surf, you know, in Oahu and play baseball.
So. Yeah, that seems like every college kid's dream.
Yeah, yeah. How can it get any better? And so I was excited for that, and I signed a full scholarship with them for the remainder of my college education. And it was on the day before our first practice of the season that I just I don't know what happened to me, but I just laid in bed and I just was just overcome with all of these, you know, and people say visions. I didn't have anybody like appear to me. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like visions in my mind, you know, of seeing things that I couldn't understand. I couldn't figure out why I was seeing these things because I wasn't in a frame of mind to actually be thinking about those things. I was getting ready for the baseball season, and I had been talking with some major league scouts in the area, and so my frame of mind was all about baseball. It had nothing to do with church or going on a mission or anything like that. And so that's why it was so shocking to me what was taking place in my mind, and I literally could not go to sleep. I laid there, you know, I tried to get to bed early for a two-a-day practice on that for that season, starting that day, and I laid there and I laid there and I literally did not go to sleep that night. And I could just, for some reason, I was thinking about ancestors for my family that were not members of the church, and bringing them into the church and preaching the gospel on a mission. And, you know, it was interesting, and I actually haven't told this. This is the first time I've ever said this publicly. So hope that's okay.
But yeah, absolutely.
It was interesting. My mom had never told me something. When she was pregnant with me, she had she was really, really, really sick, just throwing up, just horribly sick. And when she had me in the hospital, she also said that she wasn't in the frame of mind to be thinking along these lines. She just wasn't regarding a mission for her son. And she said that the closest thing that she'd ever had to sort of a vision or a very spiritual experience was right after she had delivered me, that she had this vision of me walking with my companion as a missionary in some place that had really green, lush trees, and there was sort of like a fence in the background, and that she could describe. And she said it was the weirdest thing, didn't expect it, never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to talk about it because she didn't want that to like put some sort of like expectation on me that, you know, hey, I saw this, so you need to fulfill that, you know?
Right.
And we a lot of times we have self-fulfilled prophecies in the church.
Yeah.
And we work to the end. And not that that's bad, but she didn't want to put that expectation on me, wanted me to come to that conclusion on my own. And so it was just crazy, you know, when I got on my mission, I went to my mission in Michigan. And if you've ever been to Michigan, there are a lot of nice green trees. And I had sent her back a picture of me walking with my companion on the street with this fence and these trees. And she was like, you know, that's as close as it came to what she saw in her mind.
Wow.
Those many years ago. And it's just interesting because she describes that time as just, she wasn't at a time in her life where she would have been thinking about that as well. And so for these things to line up, I think the guy that interviewed me at Deseret put that in the article, where it was just truly, you know, God will feel after you. I think it's Acts chapter 17 where he talks about that we are the offspring of God, and a couple of verses before that, that he is not far from every one of us. And no matter where we're at in our lives, if we have this foreordination, which Joseph Smith said that we were all foreordained to some great purpose, mm-hmm. in this church, that he'll be right there and he'll prompt you. And it's just, I guess it's just up to us to recognize that and treat it for what it is and follow it. And so fortunately, that's what I did. I gave up my scholarship. First I told my current team coach that I had made this decision. I was going to go on a mission. He mm-hmm. had no idea what that was, but he, you know, said good luck and was pretty nice about it. My other coach in Hawaii got pretty angry about it because we had just spent a lot of time going over all the paperwork and signing papers and all the back and forth that takes place for doing that sort of thing with a scholarship. And, I started getting ready to go on a mission.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, I met my wife about 3 weeks after I did all this. And we were engaged on my mission.
We'll get into that because I read about that. I thought that was fascinating. But I want to go back a little bit to your dream. Then we'll take a break and we'll talk about your wife and how the mission played out and all that. So. So in the night of not sleeping, I have a couple of questions about it because do you find kind of like a physically like limiting thing like in Alma the Younger, right, where you obviously weren't like stunned or whatever, as Alma the Younger was just, you know, discussed or is written about, you know, that he couldn't move or anything like that. But was it like you couldn't shed the thoughts?
Yeah, totally. That's the closest I've ever. That's the closest I can come to describing it. Is sort of like an Alma the Younger or a Paul on the road to Damascus, even though Christ didn't appear to me or an angel didn't come and mm-hmm. you know, and I definitely wasn't laying there stunned, but I definitely felt that way. I felt convicted of not living up to everything that I was supposed to do. I felt I felt very lonely and unhappy, and just I can't really describe how I was feeling. Just really unhappy with where I was at. You know, you spend your day. You know, you're with your guys on a baseball team. You're with your friends surfing. You're doing all this. You're out at night hanging out with people and you put on this front, at least I put on this front, like, yeah, this is fun. And it was, and I think a lot of people in the world live this way. You see celebrities and different people out there where, you know, it looks like everything is going great. And man, that person must have the most awesome life. They surf and play baseball and have friends and fun and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would lay my head down on my pillow, all I felt was emptiness. I really felt that. That's probably the best word, is empty. And I think there were things leading up to that night, just feeling that way. And it was almost like this was like the night. That was in the article, that I felt like the next day held some sort of cosmic significance for me, that if I went to that baseball practice and I didn't make that decision that night, if that night hadn't have happened to me, then my life would have gone in a completely different direction. I probably would have gone to Hawaii. I probably would have remained less active or completely inactive. I might have met different people. I might have signed, you know, in a middle round in the MLB draft and gone and spent the rest of my life on a bus traveling from, you know, ballpark to ballpark and been around, you know, a different crowd. So I guess emptiness is the way that I felt. I can't imagine that's any different than how Alma felt, but maybe in a even more intense way, that he was stunned. But just emptiness from not living the gospel, and just feeling like, what is all this stuff? Like, I could become a great baseball player, I could have all this fun, but at the end of the day, if I can't lay my head down on my pillow and feel peace, then what am I doing? You know, what is it all for? And so that's when I think all those thoughts and visions and things that I was, you know, envisioning sort of flooded in, and it just consumed the night.
One more question before I let you take a break. You know, in the story of the first vision that we hear from Joseph Smith, it talks about how in the moment before there was this greatness, there was this utmost darkness, right? It's a,
yeah,
you know, the darkness that almost had kept me entirely bound and all this stuff, right? Is that the loneliness, or were there other experiences like that before you called the coach where it was very clearly the adversary working against you?
Oh, I definitely see that. That's why I think I said that I felt like God was done nudging me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was being nudged, you know, multiple times. The writing was on the wall. You need to do this. You need to go serve a mission. You have a different path in life. I felt that over and over again, and I put it off because I loved playing baseball and surfing and my lifestyle so much at the time. And, you know, I kind of said the phrase godly beatdown, which I don't know if that's irreverent or
no,
whatever.
No, I think that's apropos. Sure.
That's really what I felt like. I think that's probably what happened to Alma, and I'm sure that Alma and his dad, even, you know, Alma and then Alma the younger and then the sons of Mosiah. And I think lots of us, I think every one of us, at some point in our life, we're nudged and nudged and nudged. And, eventually God will hand out a little bit of a beat down to us in his way. And some people will take that beat down and they'll keep going the direction that they were going because they don't want to change. And I was, I still was, you know, tempted to just, oh, well, it's just, I'm just having these feelings and they'll pass mm-hmm. in the morning and I'll go about my business and do my thing. But I just, felt strongly to follow those impressions. And so I did.
Let's take a break for a second. When we come back, I want to talk about, your mission and then obviously meeting your wife and all that. You said you were engaged while you were on your mission. So we'll get into a little bit of that. That'll come back in the second block here of the Cultural Hall.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. One in five children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Hi, friends. Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. I get a lot of emails with feedback from customers. Here's one. Dear Dan, I just had the best experience ever. I bought a computer from Shane at your State Street store. I asked several what I thought were really stupid questions. Shane was super courteous and made me feel comfortable through the whole process. People need to understand how important it is to support a local company, especially when your experience is so good. PC Laptops really does love me. Signed, Satisfied. I love hearing feedback like that. It really just gives me the chills. It's the whole reason why I got into the computer business in the first place. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for as low as $799, and it comes with a lifetime warranty. That means if anything goes wrong, we're going to take care of you. Just check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we really do love you.
All right, so second block of the Cultural Hall here. It's episode number 227 with Greg Trimble. You can check it out, GregTrimble.com. He's a blogger and a small business gentleman. Soon to be sponsor of the Cultural Hall, which, by the way, thank you so much for that. We'll just keep throwing that out there until it happens, right? That's how you do life. You just throw things out, and sometimes it sticks. The name of his blog is...
Yeah, that's right.
The name of his blog is Life Through My Eyes, so you can check that out. And then the name of your book, let's see if I can get this to pull up right. It's Dads Who Stay and Fight, and we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up. But... you mentioned before we took a break that you were engaged on your mission. So immediately I think, lock your heart. So let's talk a little bit about it. How'd you meet your wife?
Yeah. So about 3 weeks after I had quit baseball, and dropped my scholarship, when I started going to church, I was down at the Huntington Beach Ward. We met. It was an interesting circumstance.
What do you mean?
We met. I was kind of alone when I went there. I didn't have any friends whatsoever. I didn't know anybody at the singles ward. A guy by the name of Jevin came up to me, and I write about this in one of the blogs, how important and sort of integral he was to me coming back to church.
And his name is Jevin? His name is Jevin?
Yeah, his name is Jevin.
Like Kevin with a J?
Yeah.
That is so Mormon. I love it.
Yeah. He's straight out of Utah. So
yeah, of course.
If he hears this, yeah. Jevin Ferguson. But, you know, I didn't have any friends. Nobody was really talking to me much. I can't really blame them. I was probably sort of standoffish. I can be that way if I don't know anybody in the room. And sort of introverted. And so... You know, I went to class, and, you know, you never know how things go. You know, you could show up to church and nobody could befriend you, or you could just not find a connection with anybody, and you never know if you'll come back, you know, with mm-hmm. a lot of people.
Yeah.
But he reached his hand out to me, and, you know, he was quite a bit older than I was. You know, I was a 21-year-old, just as gruff as they come, straight out of baseball, and he had been a return missionary, and he reaches, I think he's probably 10 years older than me, I think, but maybe not that much, but he reached his hand out to me and said, hey, you know, come sit with me, come hang out with me, and we became great friends. I actually moved out of his, or out of my baseball house that I was living with baseball guys.
Mm-hmm.
And moved in with him down in Corona Del Mar, and we spent the next few months together just hanging out. And he was a great friend and a great mentor. And interestingly enough, this girl that I met was friends with his friends, and she was actually at the singles ward picking up a book from one of those friends, and I saw her, and we shook hands, and that was it. We hung out that night. And
what do you mean that was it? Like a love at first sight, or like you started planning out being married that night?
At least for me, it was. Yeah, I mean, we shook hands. Funny enough, she was not supposed to really be there. She didn't go to that ward. She went to her parents' ward, and so we just, I didn't see her for multiple months after, and then we ended up hanging out a couple times. I don't know, the details are fuzzy with when and how much we hung out.
Sure.
But we hung out over time, and.
But then you're leaving, so wouldn't she have just been like, oh, this guy's leaving, and now I'm going to go? Or she obviously felt something, too, if you left and then the engagement happened as you were gone.
Yeah, she said, and this feels weird saying, but she said that she felt something special when she met me, and then she went home and told her mom, and she couldn't really figure out why, because... I didn't look like a return missionary. I think I had a black shirt on that day and like a gold tie. And I was, who knows? I didn't look the part. I actually stopped at Del Taco and snuck a burrito in the church with me. I mean, this is how this like base I was. But she said she just felt something, and she went home and told her mom. And anyway, we hung out, and we just really enjoyed each other. We ended up studying the gospel a lot. I told her I was going on a mission. She said, "Great, we'll study together." And we studied a lot.
We studied so much.
Yeah, every day we studied together. Oh, really? We really did.
No, I believe you, but that does, you have to admit that sounds like it's like, we got together to study a lot.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I'm saying? We studied a whole lot.
Right.
And so she helped.
That was a really good time for me. Because I didn't know very much about the gospel at all. I mean, I didn't know very much at all. And so I got really fascinated with with sort of the deeper things, some of the things, some of the controversy, some of the things we're even asked to understand nowadays, with the church essays and things like that. I got really into that. Both studying the doctrine, reading the scriptures, but then also diving into those things. And then interestingly enough, I was sent to Michigan, which is one of the anti-Mormon publishing capitals of the world.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think Salt Lake is probably moved into first place now. But the Zondervan Press was there, and Calvin College was there, and that's the Reformed Church is equivalent to like RBYU, and they have a lot of Mormon studies and Jehovah's Witness studies, and the Zondervan Press would print a lot of material that was critical to the church. And so it was interesting that I had studied all that stuff, and then that's where I had been sent. And I spent 10 and a half months in Grand Rapids, which is where all that stuff is located, right in and around there.
Did you run into a lot of people who were really anti? I served in Cleveland, so just kind of to the south of you were in Ann Arbor or Detroit?
I was in Lansing, Michigan.
Oh, Lansing. Okay, just south. There were some people, sure, where you could tell that they had been indoctrinated as far as anti. But for the most part, people didn't know or just were like, well, that's not my church. Were there a lot of anti people?
Oh, very much so. Hmm. Very much so. And it's interesting, and that's kind of translated into how I try to run my blog, is that I really loved talking with these people. Some people get really agitated and things when anti-Mormons or I hate calling them anti-Mormons. I like to call them just critics. Yeah. You know, they're critical of the church. And
let's call them critics. We don't need to call them anti-Mormons. Critics from here on out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are some people that are just straight up anti, but I think a lot of people are just, they don't agree, and so they're critical of it, just like we are sometimes with other stuff. But anyway, I really loved meeting a lot of these people. I actually learned a ton from them. I still remember experience in Grand Rapids where we were, oh, hey, are you guys interested? Yeah, we're interested in hearing your message. And I went back to somebody's office where it was their sole business to print literature and run a blog based on, you know, trying to discredit the church. And I walked in this place and there was, you know, Journal of Discourses and church history. And
you're like, wow, you've got a lot of books. You must really be interested in the message I have to share.
Oh, my goodness. There was a Joseph Smith death mask. There was Kirtland bank money.
Wow.
There was everything I could possibly want in my own, like, collectible library. Mm-hmm. They had. And they open up the scriptures. They had an incense sitting right on the desk. They open up the scriptures, and their scriptures were marked up just as much as any church scholar that I've seen.
Wow.
And so I was like, oh, dang, this is going to be interesting. And so I had a lot of fun talking with these guys because, it's fun to just go back to the Bible and look at the structure of the church. And as far as I'm concerned, I haven't found or seen any other Christian church on the face of the earth that resembles the New Testament church the way it does in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And so I love to go back to that. And so a lot of times, you know, because I didn't live with Joseph Smith or know everything, and a lot of the stuff we have is, and it's done in shorthand or it's secondhand accounts or things like that. I try to focus on, you know, the doctrine and the teachings and what those do for me rather than get bogged down with details that, you know, two different people saw things two different ways, you know?
Right.
So that was a lot of fun for me. And I truly do love talking to those people. And that's why on my blog, you'll notice that a lot of times people have asked me, why don't you censor the comments? And I really don't censor the comments. I do moderate them in case there's, you know, a lot of profanity or things that are unethical or illegal or immoral. But as far as people asking honest questions, I try not to censor that.
Interesting, just sort of side question. So, you know, say that something is just laden with curse words. Do you delete it or do you go back in and edit it and make them not curse words or send a message to the person? Or how do you moderate it then?
It totally depends on the tone of the comment, mm-hmm. whether I feel like it's, you know, a really heartfelt comment or whether someone's just trying to troll or be mean.
Right. I just don't want the mean,
you know, just the mean, real mean, angry stuff to be on there.
It's interesting to me. So we get some of that too, because we'll post like news articles and things like that. And some people will come at us, with just horribly trolly comments. You know, this is on Facebook or on Twitter, even, you know, some of those places. And I leave them all. Because similar to me, I think that it's a discussion and it's good for people to know. Even the people that are trolling, like I find it fascinating, and this is not a topic for as we're getting to know you, but you can probably relate to it certainly, is that as members of the church, right, we're all about, you know, loving as Jesus loved and all this stuff. But like someone makes a rude comment about the church on some sort of social media, and people, not all, but some people just get vicious and catty and snarky and like everything that I feel like isn't and shouldn't be what the church is. And it's like, I'm a member and you are so dumb. And it's like, oh my gosh, maybe let's not go about it that way.
Yeah, totally. I actually just wrote a blog that sort of tackles that. It's called, like, I think it's the coming revolution in Mormonism or something like that. And it talks all about that, you know, that we got to just figure out a way to love people and not react, not lose our cool, you know, not try to look on the outward appearance. And I got a lot of great comments, but then, you know, there's some, you know, really stalwart members of the church that were like, no, we just feel like we're getting, you know, if we're good, then, and we're judging people and judging righteously, then, you know, we're being talked down to or something. It's like, no, it's not about that. It's just loving people, you know, like the Savior did, truly like the Savior did. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, he turned over the tables in the temple, but like he subsequently went on the cross and died for those same people. And he's like, you know, forgive them. And they don't know what they do. I know he's probably specifically talking about the Romans, but I think he's talking about the Jews as well. And that's laid forth in the Old Testament quite a bit. So,
yeah, I find that sometimes so funny where people are like, how dare you? And then they turn and do the same thing again. It's like, I don't know if you noticed this, but you just did exactly what that guy did, only against him instead of with him. So maybe a little self-evaluation right now. Let's take a little look.
Totally.
So
I don't think there's a problem with people defending the church.
No,
it's just how do you go about it? It's do you start name calling? Do you start condescending? Do you do you just put the facts out there? If you want to throw your testimony on it, then great. But you know, anytime we lose our cool or start saying things that are really they're actually going to reflect more poorly on the church than if we had just left it there. And you know, if you respond with something, and then you now are a reflection on the church, as you defend the church in a way that's not the way Christ would defend it.
Well, and the hardest thing with it is it's written, right? So I can be completely, you know, serious, but someone can take it in a tone of condescending or of joking or of mocking or something like that. So I really feel like in a lot of those cases, it really is the best way to just be like, all right, that person made their statement and they now can feel like they were heard because they typed it out. But anything that I'm going to say, you know, is gonna be either misinterpreted or used against me. But the hard thing with that is, I think that as members of the church, we go, well, we can't just let it stand. We can't just let what that person said stand. I have to stand up, and I think there's a time and a place, because I do think it can reflect very poorly on the church.
Yeah, do it in a different way. If you don't want to let something stand. Then, in fact, I'm writing a book about this right now. It's called The Virtual Missionary. It'll be out around Thanksgiving. But it talks about that exact principle, is that if you want to do something about it, then get online and start a blog and start publishing content with your defense and with your point of view. You don't need to get into an argument with somebody to not let something stand. You can get out and make a stand on the search engines and start blogging and writing art. I mean, this Elder Ballard's been preaching this since 2008. Elder Bednar came out and asked everyone to do it. You know, not get into comment wars, but get into creating content that is based around doctrine and your testimony.
And that's one of the things, you know, originally I started the Cultural Hall to be able to interview famous Mormon people. That was part of it.
Yeah.
But what it has quickly evolved into was being a place to have conversations that aren't being had anywhere else, right? Having the opportunity to speak with people that maybe everyone doesn't have access to, but we now get to learn more about Greg Trimble. Or, you know, we do topics all over the place. And so it's sort of evolved into that. Like a virtual missionary, like you said. I want to get back to this. How did you get engaged on your mission? And then we'll take a break.
So I didn't get engaged on my mission. I got engaged previous to leaving on my mission.
Okay, so all right. So tell me how this works.
Oh, well, I proposed to her and then I put a ring on her finger.
And then you said, and I'll be back. Peace out.
Yeah, no, it was funny. You know, we just talked a lot and we loved each other, and we, you know, I was a little bit older we had talked about, man, well, should I just stay home and we should get married? I'm kind of old. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'd turned 22 and.
Oh my gosh, that's so old.
Well, yeah, for a missionary in those days, you know, yeah. I mean, I think 25 was like the age cutoff, I think, at that time. But, you know, in my past, we could get married, we could serve a senior couples mission, it all sounded like a good idea. And, you know, that was sort of my short term, you know, immediate desire was just stay home and get married and get to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was encouraging, you know, of the original thing, you know, hey, you know, you wanted to go on a mission. I'll support you. I was like, you're not going to support me. I'm going to be out there and you're going to go find someone else, you know, within a few months. Mm-hmm. Like, we know how this goes.
Yeah. Like how it does for most people.
Yeah. We know what the numbers don't lie. We know how this goes. Like, uh-huh. So what are we going to do? And so I just like, man, you know, I really want to be with her, but I really want to serve a mission. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put a ring on her finger, you know, and hope, see how that goes, see if it improves my chances. So I proposed to her at the Salt Lake Temple. She waited. We wrote letters back and forth. And for 2 years, it's funny, my mission president knew that I was getting married when I got back. Our wedding was going to be about 3 weeks after I got back.
Oh, my gosh.
He asked me to extend. And I'm like, oh, thanks, president. You know, so I extended another month and a half.
Oh, really? So you did it. So you had to push the wedding back.
Yeah. And then that got pushed back even further because everything had to change. So,
well, you know, that had to be like, oh, do we still like each other now? Oh, okay, we do. Good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that was a problem because we stayed. I would just, man, those 2 years of our communication. I mean, if you could see the letters, there's just hundreds and hundreds of letters of just very deep and. Just our relationship grew so strong without us even being near each other through those letters. And she grew and I grew. She still to this day says that was the two best years of her life because of how much she studied and tried to get closer to the Lord because she felt like, you know, that I was. And when I came home off my mission, she wanted to be, you know, right there with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, everything turned out great.
All right. So coming back, I want to talk about just exactly how the blog kind of came about and then talk about the books that you have out or the book that you have out and what you have coming out. And we'll wrap up this whole thing. We'll do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall. Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third and final block here at the Cultural Hall, sitting down with Greg Trimble. GregTrimble.com is where you can find it. And, you know, kind of off the off mic, you were talking about the lock your heart thing, which was always the joke, right? We as missionaries, I was the king of... Yeah, how long has your girlfriend been riding you? Well, I'm going to bet you that she'll be gone by this date, right? I was brutal about some of that stuff. And
you were the great prognosticator.
Yeah, but I was right 95% of the time. But the whole talk is this, you know, this thing about locking your heart while you're on your mission. And you bring up just an interesting point. Share that real quick, and then I want to get to what you have projects-wise.
Yeah, I studied that talk quite a bit because it was obviously a topic I was interested in having, you know, being engaged. And so, but it's really interesting. A lot of people would use that. In fact, in MTC and other places, people would sort of come down on me on, you know, for having a fiance. Oh, you can't do that. That's bad. That's wrong. And, mm-hmm. and did you relock your heart? And I said, yeah, read it again. Read lock your heart. Because inside of that, it says, if you have somebody, then lock her in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, then lock your heart. So, you know, you go on your mission, you lock your heart and don't let that get in the way. But if you had somebody, then lock her in. And it's funny. We actually, this experience is really important to my wife because after we got engaged at the Salt Lake Temple, we immediately, for some reason, walked over to the visitor center. And the first couple that we came in contact with was a senior couple. And we just got engaged and but I'm going to be going on a mission. And they said, oh, that's so interesting. I was engaged. The man said, I was engaged on my mission and she waited for me. And there they were. They had been married for 40 or 50 years.
Oh my gosh.
And that felt like a confirmation to my wife that, wow, you know, kind of like, you know, those tender mercies, right? That's the first couple we come in contact is with somebody else, one of those other rare couples that were engaged on a mission. So it was good for us.
Yeah, definitely something you don't hear too much of. And is it something that you would advise?
Not in most situations. In my situation, yeah, it was a real strength to me. She was a real strength to me. You know, but I was a little older. If I could advise, I would advise to go on a mission as soon as you can and avoid the pitfalls of life that can take place between ages 18 and 21.
All right. So what do you have project-wise now going on? Why did you start this whole blog thing?
I started this blog because I wanted to – I'm not very good at journaling, but – I would write in notebooks a lot of my thoughts and impressions down. I wrote a lot on my mission. I just had a lot of notebooks that were sitting on the shelf, getting dusty. And I know that as the years go by, they'll just get lost and go away. And so I really started this blog as sort of a journal for my kids to read as they got older. I knew that's where the kids are going to hang out. They're going to hang out on the internet. And so I thought, man, let me write these things down so that I can preserve them in digital format online so that whatever happens to these notebooks over the years, you know, there's still a digital footprint for those things. And so really it started out as just writing some of those things and sharing them to see if I didn't even have a Facebook page. I had like a one page, you know, pretty basic one page website that I built off of a little template. It took me a couple hours. And so I just put out an article and for some reason, I think it was on the 3 Degrees of Glory. And for some reason it just got shared just through our personal Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook algorithms were a lot different back then than they are now. So I think it gained a lot more visibility through a personal account. And for some reason, just got shared. And it ended up bringing down a very basic server, you know, a server in a shared environment. I think it was like a Host Monster or Bluehost or something.
Mm-hmm.
Those servers aren't really equipped to handle a lot of traffic. And so, you know, at that time I thought, wow. And I got a lot of comments and feedback, like, this really helps me. And so it sort of evolved into, wow, I always wanted to be a missionary. When I got home, I wanted to keep being a missionary. And people always said on the mission, oh, it won't be the same. You won't be able to be a very good missionary, as good of a missionary. And I said, man, I got to find a way. And, so that was sort of like a combined thing that I could do is is leave a journal for posterity, and at the same time try to be a missionary by reaching people, you know, throughout the world that I couldn't otherwise reach just in my small circles in my hometown.
So not at all the money thing, just to be able to share, have your kids read about it and everything like that, which I think is awesome. I think it, yeah. I mean, like you said, just in how it's been able to reach people, you know, you're definitely doing something right. I think it's funny how you even started this out where you're like, well, I'm no sort of writer, but you know what? You are, and people love seeing what you post. Just a quick kind of housekeeping things. Do you write like once a week? How often can people anticipate something new from you?
It's totally sporadic, but let me go back real quick.
Okay.
For what you said about being a writer. The reason I do say that, it's not because there's definitely elements to that. It's not because I'm trying to be, I think I'm a good writer, but I'm trying to be humble and say I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I truly, in school, it was literally the only class that I got a D in. I had to retake my language arts class. I could not stand language arts. I could not stand conventional writing styles. I fought with it for my entire college career. And then I had a professor in my very last year of my bachelor's degree, a business professor who was the writing professor. Very last language arts class I was going to take in my college career. And this lady said something that has manifested itself in everything that I write, which is, she said, we live in an age where people don't want technical. They, when you write an email to someone, when you write an article, when you write to people, write to them as if you're having a conversation with them. If for any reason the things that you're writing does not sound like your voice, then you're doing something wrong, and people won't really grab onto that.
Yeah.
And so I have truly, so when I say I was a bad writer, I mean, I get the grammar Nazis just constantly, just after me. The writers, the professors, oh, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you broke this rule, you broke that rule. And, I know I am. And in many cases, I will write something and I'll actually read over it, and it will devolve grammatically because I don't want anything that I write to sound like a different person
than who you are.
That's a big reason why I bring that up, is that I'm not a great technical writer. In fact, I've had great technical writers ask me, why do people read your stuff? why don't they read my stuff? It's 10 times better. Yeah, you're right. It is technically 10 times better. but still, you know, people don't want that. People
want that they can read.
They want you to be real. They want you to be you.
I have just a couple more minutes. I want to ask you this. So Dads Who Stay and Fight, that's the book that you have out now. People can get that both digitally and in hardcover?
No hardcover. I think the hardcover is coming out soon.
Okay. But anywhere the books are sold, right? So you can get it through your website. I know gregtrimble.com, but also I'm sure like Amazon and all of the regular places for that.
Yeah, Deseret, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Costco, all those places.
You mentioned another book.
Also, there's an audio book as well. I'm really big in audio books. I just want to throw that out there.
Are you the one reading it, or is that read by somebody else?
Yeah, I'm reading it.
Okay. You mentioned earlier a project that you have coming out around November.
Yes, that's called The Virtual Missionary.
That's an effort
to sort of deconstruct everything that I've done from the beginning of starting my blog until now.
Mm-hmm.
So I will speak at different places and they say, oh, this is awesome. Like, how can we do that? And I just don't have the time to explain it to them. So I'm trying to explain that to them in the book. As I had a guy from KSL call and say, well, how are you doing this? How are you getting traffic for these basic gospel topics? And
mm-hmm.
so So that's really what it is. It's sort of like an answer to all those questions.
And then the third book, you referenced a third project.
The third book is a book on missionary work. It's for missionaries, member missionaries, and missionaries that are about to go out. And it tackles some of the tough topics and gives them my experience and my conversion story. And that book is called The Missionary Swiss Army Knife.
And when can we anticipate that coming out?
I don't know for sure. It's not on date yet, but it's done.
Cool. Very, very cool. Okay, we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall three questions, so I'll ask those of you right now. The first question is do you have a calling, and if so, what is it?
I do. I'm on the High Council over missionary work in my stake.
See, I knew it. I knew there was a theme here. if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make up one, what would you pick and why?
Missionary. I would love to serve a mission again. I would serve a mission anytime, anywhere, and for the rest of my life. I love my mission.
Well, and you know your wife will wait for you too, so maybe that's a thing you should look a little hard. No, I'm just teasing.
No, she'll be with me.
oh, that's what you meant. So like a couple's mission.
Yeah.
You're like, sweetheart, they made an exception because I was talking about it with the culture hall, so I'm going to be gone for a couple years.
Right?
We did it before. We'll do it again. We'll be just fine.
No way. I don't think she'd go for that this time.
The second go around, huh? Do you have any idea how hard this was?
Right?
And then the final question that I have for you is a question we ask everyone and interpret it however you will, but what is your favorite part of your faith?
Oh, that's easy. That to me, it is so completely logical. It is so logical, and we talk a lot about the heart, mm-hmm. and I honestly believe that the way that Heavenly Father communicates with us is through our mind first. In fact, Joseph Smith backed that up, and he said that, that the spirit is when pure intelligence is flowing into you, and Boyd Kitpacker talked about the instrument of your mind being the foundation of your character. And I honestly believe that the things that of the gospel make lots of sense. It doesn't mean that there's not things in history or things that we can't understand or that might not be completely unfolded. But as far as the core gospel plan and eternal families and those things, it's just so very logical to me in comparison to so many of the other things that I've studied in the world. I've been very interested in studying Eastern religions and a lot of the other world religions. And ultimately, this church is the only church, and I talk about this in the book, Dads Who Stay and Fight, that it's the only church on the planet that teaches so definitely that God is a husband and a father and a family man. And then as part of our doctrine that I can also continue to be a husband and a father and a family man in the eternities. And to me, that is just, that's so powerful. That's something that nobody can really diminish from or take away.
Thank you. We hope this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you were not healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.